This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, there's a deadline approaching for the Grain Millers Harvest Showdown concerning the commercial cattle show and sale. We'll speak with committee member Brett Callan about that. The Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan has launched a survey of farmers about the impact of drought on settling unfilled contract grain deliveries. President Todd Lewis will tell us about that. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says the province's pork producers responded to the call to engage with federal election candidates and their voices were heard, but there was little in terms of strong agricultural policies or discussion of agricultural issues. Cam Dahl will join us on the program. Grain prices were moving up again this week. Commodity futures advisor with PI Financial Adam Piccolo will have the latest on that. All that and much more coming up on today's edition of GX on Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Realty Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. And Phil, it's mainly sunny here in the Parkland region today, but it's a little chillier than we've been used to.
Yeah, cool air mass has settled in. There's actually the core of this air mass has moved well off to our east. It's sitting over western Ontario. But the western boundary of this cold air mass is still over central Saskatchewan. So we're in it, but that's not very far. We're not in this for long. This whole system, even though it's a bit of a cutoff low, which tends to slow things down a little bit, the overall progression is eastward. So even slow, it doesn't have very far to go before it gets far enough away from us to allow the warm air, which is really building, especially of the western United States, but starting to work into southwestern Canada too, get that to all build eastward a bit, and we'll start to see that increase in temperatures by tomorrow. A pretty quick turnaround after the bit of a cooler day today. A little bit of a breeze, though, to go along with the cooler air, sort of adding to it. Not really a wind chill at these temperatures, but when you've got the close to average for this time of year, which is 14, we're right on 15 for the high. Definitely a bit of a chill when that wind gusts to 45 kilometers per hour. There is the warm front sliding in from the west, and with that, a little bit of cloud cover. The wind, though, will shift from the northwest into the west to southwest. Still 20 to 35, at least for the first half, maybe two-thirds of the night. We drop off to 6 and very quickly start coming up, likely a little before the sun comes up. Partly sunny day tomorrow. We'll tack on about 10 degrees from today as that warm air builds in. Not everybody necessarily gets into the warmest air. It looks like the ridge is really going to be still crossing our region through the afternoon. That means western Manitoba likely noticeably cooler. But southwest of us, heading especially south of the Trans-Canada, even warmer, could be into the upper 20s tomorrow afternoon. Wind west, maybe southwest, 15 to 25. This air mass is progressing today, tonight, early tomorrow. Then it sort of stalls. And a little bit of a wave of low pressure cuts across to our north, stops the northward motion of the air mass, shifts the winds briefly north to northeast tomorrow night into at least early on Sunday. But the impact in the temperature is not really that great because the warm part of the air, just not the warming part, is here. 8 degrees for the low Saturday night, 24 the high on Sunday. And this ridge looks to be fairly long-lasting. The warm air will be in place to start off the week. A little breeze, especially Sunday night into Monday, as that the warmest really gets established. 25 Monday, I think we could easily top that, but again, with the boundary maybe sitting just to our southwest, 25, but some of us getting to 28. Tuesday, I think more of us are up to around 28 with a mixture of sun and cloud, and probably Wednesday too, we're still almost all in the warm air mass. A sharp drop off, a good 10 degree cooler for Thursday.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at 11 degrees, Swan River and Shoal Lake Russell 12, Dauphin and Brandon 14, Roblin 10. Regina is at 13 degrees, Saskatoon 14, Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington all reporting in at 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a mainly sunny sky, a northwest wind at 28, gusting to 46 kilometers an hour. 50% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 12 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of 21 degrees and dropped to a low of 4 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is 15 degrees. The normal low is 2 degrees. The sun rose in Yorkton at 6:39 this morning, and it will set at 6:44 tonight. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was Emerson at 27 degrees, the cold spot Brandon at plus 4 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was Estevan at 24 degrees, the cold spot was Rosetown at minus 1 degree. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 90 seconds time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. The 32nd annual Grain Millers Harvest Showdown in Yorkton is scheduled to run from November 3rd to the 6th at the Gallagher Center. Brett Callan is a committee member for the Commercial Cattle Show and Sale. He says there's a deadline that's fast approaching.
They're still a little bit of ways away, but they are coming up. So I know folks maybe might be shipping calves here in the next few weeks if they haven't already. But the entry deadlines this year are going to be October 14th, and that's across the board for everything, for our futurity show, our commercial show, Pennables, everything like that. They're all going to close the same day, which will be, coming up on October 14th.
Can you give me an idea of what kinds of categories there are?
Yeah, for sure. So our futurity show, which will run on Thursday, we're accepting open heifers for that. We're also accepting bred heifers, and of course with missing last year's show, normally the way that futurity show works is you bring them as open one year and then you get to show them off again to see what they've turned into as bred heifers and then once again as cow-calf pairs. But with missing the show last year, obviously we didn't have any open heifers, so this year we're making exception, and any folks can be bred heifers. So these heifers will not be for sale. You're just showing them to kind of show off your farm, show off everything that you're capable of raising, and so you can bring them as bred heifers this year. They do have to have a certificate of bred from a vet, and that has to be done after October 1st. And so that's a Thursday show. We also have a pen of bulls show that day as well. So any purebred folks who want to show off their pen of three bulls, all breeds, any breeds, everything like that, you're more than welcome to come. So that'll happen on Thursday. Friday, we have sale cattle that will show. So on Friday, we will be showing open heifers, and these cattle will be for sale on Friday evening. So open heifers or bred heifers, both pen of threes and pen of fives. And we also have a Angus tag show that day. Those heifers don't necessarily sell, but they're also available as well, and they would be open and bred heifers as well. We also have a King of the Ring, which is one bull calf out of the pen of three. And we also have a Sweetheart Classic, which is one open heifer out of your pen of three as well. But any of those that are entered as singles also have to be entered in the pen of three show.
Will you only be able to take a limited number of entries?
Yeah, you know what? We set up our paneling the other day, and I believe we have 74 pens that we would love to fill up. So if we have more entries than that, we will make it work. So I would absolutely love to see that fill right up. That would be absolutely fantastic if we could do that.
How do you submit entries?
Yeah, you know what? Yorkton Exhibition website is the best place to go, or give the office a shout, and they'll direct you to their website, or they can fax out or email you out information if you need. Their number is 783-4800, So they can definitely get you whatever you need when it comes to entry forms or any questions to ask. They can just forward it to myself, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions about the show this year.
And do you have anything else planned?
Yeah, actually, this year we're going to start something new. We're calling it the Young Ranchers Recognition. So what we would like from anybody in the community, if you think your neighbor who is under 40 is part of the criteria, that is just doing a fantastic job with their cattle end of their operation. You know, you drive by their animals, you really respect what they do as cattle people in the industry. So we're having an award for that. You have to be recognized from a neighbor or anybody in the industry. Form, same thing, they'll be up online there. Just a little write-up about what, you know, why you think they're worthy of this award. And on Friday night before the sale, we're going to recognize these young ranchers. We have a committee that's going to decide who they're going to pick every year. We're starting that out just to, you know, give a shout out to the young and up and coming people in this industry. And I know it's sad that we have to say under 40 for that, but it's part of what's going on, that you know, folks in their 30s that are ranching are doing a heck of a job of what they're doing. And I think it's just a way of the Yorkton Exhibition to just highlight somebody every year. So that's something new this year that I think will go over very well. And like I said, anybody is open to apply to it. Like I said, you it's better if, you know, a neighbor or somebody from the industry recognizes you that way, I think.
Entry forms for all of the Grain Millers Harvest Showdown events can be found online at www.yorktonexhibition.com. It's time now for the AgriView portion of our program, and that's a presentation of People's Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
The International Grains Council released its monthly supply and demand report yesterday, projecting a 6 million metric ton increase in total global grain production at 2.289 billion metric tons in 2021-22. That change consisted of a 7 million metric ton increase in global corn production, offset by a 1 million metric ton decrease in world wheat output. Soybean production was forecast to hold steady at 380 million. Global grain ending stocks for 2021-22 were increased to 598.8 million metric tons, a change of 1.6% from the IGC's August report. Global wheat production in 2021-22 was pegged at 781 million metric tons, with ending stocks also down 1 million tons at 277 million. In following Statistics Canada and the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the IGC lowered its call on Canadian wheat production, pegging it at 24.5 million metric tons. There were also declines for Russia and Kazakhstan, which were countered by increases for Ukraine, China, and the European Union. The world's production of corn was up 0.6% at 1.209 billion metric tons, with ending stocks raised 4.4% at 282 million. This was despite the dramatic drop in corn production in Brazil, which the IGC estimated at 86.7 million metric tons. There were increases for Argentina, the U.S., the European Union, and South Africa. The Council's call on global soybean production remained the same, despite more production coming primarily out of the U.S. and Brazil. Additional gains were pegged for Ukraine, the EU, and India, but with declines in Canada and Paraguay. Ending stocks inched up 0.7% at 57.3 million metric tons. Federated Cooperatives Limited put its oil production business up for sale this week, but the co-op says it plans to keep its Saskatchewan refinery. FCL, which made $7.9 billion in sales last year from energy, crop supplies, and food, is offering to sell its crude unit, which includes a production base of 3,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, mostly liquids, and 550,000 hectares of land across Saskatchewan, Alberta, and British Columbia, according to the document issued on Monday by the Bank of Montreal. The bank is handling the sale. Also for sale is FCL's stake in a carbon capture project at Weyburn, operated by Whitecap Resources. The assets may be worth between $80 million and $100 million. In May, FCL said it planned to cut an undisclosed number of jobs at the refinery after pandemic lockdowns hit its energy revenues in 2020. The governments of Canada and Manitoba are providing $84,000 for Ag in the Classroom Manitoba to develop a Manitoba seed kit. The kit will engage students in learning about the top cereal, oil, specialty, and pulse crops grown in Manitoba. Each Manitoba seed kit will feature seed samples from 15 crops commonly grown in the province, as well as lesson plans for teachers linked to grades 3 to 6. Some of the crops included are barley, canola, sunflowers, wheat, soybeans, and wild rice. In addition, the kits will include activities that expand the learning opportunities to other subjects such as math, social studies, health, and science, and responds to the demand for hands-on learning resources that link students to agriculture in fun curriculum-oriented ways. The Manitoba Seed Kit will be available in English and French. It will be a foundational resource for the agriculture in the classroom Manitoba that will allow for other activities and learning opportunities to be added in as the program grows. The completed kits will also include a seed-related book and will be distributed by industry volunteers in Manitoba as part of Agriculture in the Classroom Manitoba's annual Canadian Agriculture Literacy Month program in March of 2022. And that is the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX on Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's sunny and 12 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The Agricultural Producers Association of Saskatchewan has launched a survey of farmers about the impact of drought on settling unfilled contract grain deliveries. President Todd Lewis says many producers won't be able to fulfill their grain contracts, and some farmers are facing crippling administration fees to buy out their contracts.
We've heard lots, both in the media and social media, and you know, and speaking to our membership, that there's lots of producers that are having trouble because of the drought this year fulfilling the contracts that they had, the forward pricing contracts that they had signed earlier in the year before drought really took hold. So it's kind of an unprecedented situation, and we're just wanting to find out from producers what kind of luck they have in negotiating with the grain companies, and you know, what kind of reaction they're getting from the grain companies as they try to satisfy these contracts.
Are some producers facing some pretty severe penalties?
Well, that's part of the issue. You know, there's administration fees, even a lot of the price discovery as far as what producers are having to pay to satisfy these contracts. There seems to be a lot of difference between individual companies and even, you know, individual delivery points. We've heard of where one company may be charging a price in one place and then it's a totally different price somewhere else for different producers. So lots of commonality in all of these complaints that, you know, producers aren't very happy with how they're being treated in some cases by the grain companies. So we thought we'd put a survey together and see how widespread the problem is. And of course, the drought is very widespread this year, and contracting has become quite a common practice. So, you know, there's a lot of producers that may find themselves paying, you know, tens of thousands, if not even hundreds of thousands of dollars to satisfy some of these contracts. So it's a big financial hit for producers in already a difficult year. And so, you know, we're just hoping that producers will be able to negotiate with grain companies. And of course, in some cases, producers are seeking legal opinions, you know, about how valid the contracts are. So it's going to be an ongoing problem that we'll hear lots about once the harvest is wrapped up now and going into the winter.
How does a producer participate in the survey?
Just go onto the APAS website and APAS.ca and follow the link there, and it's up on our website.
Earlier this summer, you put out a request to grain companies to eliminate administration fees, and there's word that some agreed to at least roll over contracts. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, that has occurred, and that's why we want to do this survey, to just find out from producers what kind of luck they are having negotiating. And as I say, some of the contracts have been satisfied, and to both the producers and the grain on both sides of the contract, well, the grain companies as well are satisfied. But unfortunately, there's a number of producers that are feeling they're not being treated fairly, and that's what we just want to find out a little bit more information if we can get it from the producers, what they're seeing on the ground, and go forward. Of course, a lot of this is provincial jurisdiction, and also the Canadian Grain Commission has a role to play here as well, we feel. So, I think if nothing else, let's see some improvements so we don't get into this kind of mess in future years.
Do you have a deadline on the producer survey?
No, we don't. No, please just ask producers as they get harvest wrapped up and they speak with their grain companies. And I think the one thing that everybody agrees on, communication is key in this. And the earlier you can communicate back with the people that you are contracted with, that if you're going to have a problem, as you market your, that I think communication is going to be key here to satisfy both sides of the contracting game this year. And it's, as I say, it's pretty well unprecedented because we've never seen such a widespread drought, and really, how common the contracting has become. And farmers want to satisfy these contracts, but they want to do it fairly, and things like administration fees and some of the penalties farmers are feeling that a lot of them are being put on with unnecessary charges. They don't, in a lot of cases they can see having to pay the difference on the contracted price to the asking price, but how they're discovering that price, and certainly when it comes to administration fees and penalties, there's lots of farmers that don't feel they're getting treated.
Todd Lewis is the president of APAS.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for October closed at 122.92, down 30. December live cattle closed at 128.15, down 47. October feeder cattle closed at 157.35, up 50. November feeder cattle closed at 158.57, up 47. October lean hogs closed at 87.27, up 252. December lean hogs closed at 76.80, up 30. And that's the livestock market conditions. The general manager of Manitoba Pork says the province's pork producers responded to the call to engage with federal election candidates, and their voices were heard, but there was little in terms of strong agricultural policies or discussion of agricultural issues. Cam Dahl says there was one key message they wanted to get across.
The overwhelming, most important part of the message that we needed to have delivered is just how important agriculture is to the Canadian economy and to Manitoba in particular. As we go further on in time, we're seeing fewer and fewer people having that direct connection and direct understanding of farm and modern agriculture. And it really is important to have all MPs understand how important our industry is in terms of jobs, economic growth, and of course, feeding the country and many countries around the world. So that was the overwhelming message. Why was it important to have farmers deliver it? It's because they're voters. And to have MPs hear that strong message from people who will be casting a ballot for them or not, it really hits home that message and helps establish relationships for now after the election when we see our MPs go back to Ottawa.
How did farmers respond to the call to be involved?
We did get a good response to the calls for action. Farmers' voices were heard, especially in the rural ridings across Manitoba. Unfortunately, what we didn't see is a really strong agriculture policies or a discussion of agriculture in the election. Again, this is This is not a subject that most people have a strong connection to, and that's something that we're going to need to continue to work on after the election, and again as MPs go back to Ottawa, to really push on getting sound policies that keep our markets open, that ensure that we have science-based rather than emotional-based policies and regulations, and that the industry really does have room to grow and develop. So, I was a little disappointed in the lack of discussion of agriculture in the election, but that wasn't the fault of farmers who really did engage with the candidates.
Given that, how successful has the effort possibly been to expand the awareness of the politicians?
I think it's not something that we just engage on during an election period. This is something that we need to work on continually and to establish those relationships with MPs and MLAs in the Manitoba legislature, and ensure that we have regular contact and ensure that they know what the issues are and really the contribution that our sector makes. So it's something that isn't just a one-off. It isn't just during an election. This kind of relationship building is something that we need to keep doing on an ongoing basis.
Why is it so important to keep in such contact with these government representatives?
I think that's where we get back to having, the regulations around the industry really do need to be based on science, and as I said, not necessarily emotion or the latest trend on the internet. If we don't have those relationships, we're not able to outline what that science-based regulatory approach really looked like, and why some of the things that might be coming up on social media really are detrimental to modern agriculture as a whole. So it's really to ensure that they're approaching regulation and legislation from a place of knowledge and a basis on science, rather than just, again, the latest fad on the internet.
Given the outcome of the election, what are the expectations moving forward?
Well, I think, not much has changed. I think most of the House of Commons Agriculture Committee has actually been all reelected. So I'm not expecting to see a whole lot of change in course or action, following the election. But some of the things that we really do need to focus on are ensuring our trade agreements are working. We've signed a significant number of trade agreements, and these are good. But we're seeing protectionism rise, and countries are using non-tariff barriers to block trade. And so we need to work on that. And CETA, our agreement with Europe, is an example where we're seeing our attempts to export blocked by sanitary barriers to trade. We also need to work on things like labor, ensuring that we have access to labor. We need to ensure that we modify and reform the business risk management programs. Really, some fundamental questions that really run to the heart of the industry and our ability to sponsor growth and development.
So what's at stake in all of this for farmers and for the public in general?
I think that's a really good question. I think that's something that isn't recognized. It's just how important agriculture, and I'm talking about the pork sector, but just how important it is to the province and to the jobs and our economy. The hog sector alone is contributing almost $2 billion a year to the Manitoba economy. We export around the world. There's 14,000 Manitobans that depend upon the sector for their jobs and their livelihoods. Those are things that we need to talk about. And if we do go down the path of regulating, based on fads or trends or what's on the internet as opposed to science, that kind of contribution really does become at risk. So there is a lot at stake for everyone in Manitoba.
Cam Dahl is the general manager of Manitoba Pork. Please stay tuned. Your commodities update will be coming up next.
Commodities update.
canola futures closed up across the board again today. November canola closed at $887.90, up $11 per metric ton. January canola closed at $878.50, up $10.10. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $9.16 per bushel, up 4.5 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $7.19¾, down a quarter of a cent. December Chicago wheat closed at $7.23¾. That's up 6 cents. December corn closed at $5.26¾, down 2.5 cents. November soybeans closed at $12.85 per bushel, up 0.75 cents. December oats closed at $5.75¼, down 4.75 cents. And that's the commodities update. Well, grain prices were moving up again this week. Commodity futures advisor with PI Financial, Adam Piccolo, says wheat futures are up 15 cents a bushel, while canola has gained $9 a metric ton.
Starting off on the canola front, November canola increased approximately $9 a ton here so far on the week, sitting at about $880 a ton on the November contract. For the Minneapolis wheat futures on the December contract, up approximately 15 cents a bushel today, sitting at $9.14½. So on the Minneapolis wheat front, that's a, I would say, a positive development here that we've seen above this $9 here again. So the high on the contract was reached back on August 13th at $9.37½ a bushel. So we could be trending back up to there. To be honest, I don't think at the time being we're going to go back to those highs or potentially push through in the short term. I think longer term, we still could see some higher prices still on the futures side of things. Importers do appear to be kind of more aggressive on the world market for wheat, as there is a general fear that food inflation could be a key kind of disruptive force for many countries. So that's kind of left buyers more active than normal on minor pullbacks, which we might have seen here a little bit this week. As well, in addition, there are kind of less fears for weakening global and Asian economic situation due to some of the real estate issues. I'm sure many people have heard of what's happening with Evergrande, which is actually the second largest property developer in China by sales. And they're potentially could be defaulting, but seems that the Chinese government has stepped in to help that. So overall, wheat has been trending up, and we'll see if that continues for next week.
How long will the prices stay strong like this?
That's a good question. I would say it really comes down to kind of a little bit of the inflation story as well, too. Stats Canada did come out with kind of some lower production and stock estimates, so that could as well kind of keep things kind of fairly stable as well. Now, kind of on a few other markets that are affecting wheat here, on the corn front, it seems that corn actually is holding some really significant support here, and that I think could be a little bit from a bullish side of things for wheat, kind of holding wheat going higher too, and a little bit of technical action that's a little bit more supportive. So now there has been some export news that has been a little bit bearish for corn, and the weather forecasts for the U.S. and South America are seen as bearish forces. But again, kind of that food inflation concerns, a push lower in the U.S. dollar recently, but also oil has continued higher, you know, are some things to watch. Now, for canola on the trends here, canola is kind of turning a little bit back higher. I have here, you do want to see kind of that November canola get above that $900 a ton. And, you know, we could be kind of headed back to some of the highs again. However, there is actually some, you know, negative forces when it comes to the soy market side of things. Beans and bean oil are actually in a downward trend. Brazil looks to receive some good rains next week, which will help their planting progress. So, you know, good weather, some sluggish export sales news for them. So there might need to be some other evidence to support the soy markets for canola.
Adam Piccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 60 seconds' time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner. BASF Canada will commit $250,000 to help fund a pollinator research chair at the University of Saskatchewan's Western College of Veterinary Medicine. For the past 6 years, honeybees have been part of the veterinary students' curriculum. Dr. Elamir Simcoe teaches students and does additional research. Dr. Gillian Meyer is the dean of the Western College of Veterinary Medicine.
Dr. Elamir Simcoe, one of our WCVM professors in the Department of Veterinary Pathology, has established a research program investigating, striving to really improve honeybee health in all across the prairies. So they're working to better understand how naturally occurring disease, but also pesticides, affect honeybee colonies. And then looking to provide beekeepers with solutions for these problems. In addition, of course, there was a lot of interest from our veterinary students in learning about honeybees and the health of honeybees. It's a little bit unusual for us. We usually work in vertebrate animals, but the importance of this for agriculture and the importance of this for the prairies, it actually has turned into something that is really a valuable teaching experience for our students.
Does the veterinary college work closely with the beekeepers in the province?
Dr. Elamir Simcoe's program certainly has strong support of the Saskatchewan Beekeepers Association, and it's through discussions with them that the idea of this chair came about in order to sustain Dr. Simcoe's work into the future.
What would be the responsibilities of the research chair?
Well, I think what he would be doing would be extending some of his research, certainly working alongside Dr. Simcoe, and then extending some of this research into further looking at some work on specific diseases. American foulbrood disease, for example, European foulbrood disease, those are two very serious diseases that affect bees in Western Canada. So it would be a collaboration and also an extension of this work.
And I understand you've had some success in raising $750,000 for this project.
That's right, we have. Yeah, we're very grateful to BASF for supporting our plans. They've funded us to the tune of $250,000, and so we're moving in the right direction for sure. We're looking throughout the agricultural sector, actually, to look for companies and groups that have an interest in supporting pollinator health and an interest in supporting, you know, sustainable agriculture. I mean, nearly one-third of the food we eat are pollinated by honeybees, and so it's important that we extend this broadly across the agricultural sector.
And the benefits of this research won't just benefit Saskatchewan beekeepers.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, certainly across the prairies, you know, we're home to most of the honeybee colonies in Canada, but certainly this information is going to be used worldwide because, of course, it would be published and available publicly for everyone to benefit from.
Dr. Gillian Meyer is the dean of the Western College of Veterinary Medicine at the University of Saskatchewan. It's raising funds to establish a research chair in pollinator health, with the first major donation coming from BASF Canada. It's time now for the agriculture weather. That's a presentation of Ducks Unlimited. The new SCIC seeding deadline for fall seeded crops is September 30th. There's still time to sign up for DUC's winter wheat program.
These winter wheat program.
The GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions today. Partly to mainly sunny, winds northwest at 20 to 35 and gusting higher, a high of 15 degrees. For tonight, partly cloudy, winds west-southwest at 20 to 35 and a low of 6. For tomorrow, partly sunny, winds west-northwest at 15 to 25 and a high of 25. Sunday, sunny, winds north-northeast at 15 to 25 and a high of 24. Monday, sunny, a high of 25. Tuesday, partly sunny, a high of 28. In the Paw, it's 11 degrees. Swan River and Shoal Lake Russell are at 12. Dauphin and Brandon, 14. Roblin, 10. Regina is at 13 degrees. Saskatoon, 14. Hudson Bay, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, 12. The Yorkton-Melville region has a mainly sunny sky, a northwest wind at 28, gusting to 46 kilometers an hour. 50% is the relative humidity. The temperature is 12 degrees. That's the agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX 94.